This new creation was as lithe and gorgeously ferocious as a leopard. Von Steuben never had a chance. His surprised cry of pain was instantly snuffed out, then his body hit the floor. Benjamin Franklin, old, still wheezing from exertion, and utterly unskilled and unprepared to defend his person, simply stood in the open doorway and waited for the end. It would be quick. It would be, hopefully, painless. He was sorry that he could not have made some kind of reconnaissance report to the Continental Congress to let them know what they were facing. Frank's had been a blunt instrument. This new one? A surgeon's scalpel. The woman was on Franklin before he even knew what had happened. He hit the floor hard, the air rushing from his lungs, with the she-creature pinning him beneath her, legs straddling Franklin's ribcage and squeezing with astounding strength. The words she said in German did not register, and Ben's face must have shown it, because the she-beast instantly switched to very fluent, very refined French.
"How did you find me? Was it the Landgrave? I'm not letting him switch his choice now. Not after all the years I gave to him."
Franklin felt his ribs complaining and tried to speak, but could only gasp with pain.
"Tell me!"
The woman, with those telltale, unnatural eyes, commanded.
"Are you here to claim a bounty?"
The woman raised her arm, cocking her fist back for what would surely be a jaw-crushing blow, and Franklin merely stared up at her, unable to stop her, the pistol in his belt hopelessly pinned.
"Mercy!"
Benjamin Franklin finally managed to force through his lips.
"For you and your kind?"
The woman spat, and then laughed, a hard, cruel, gloating noise that seemed to make the whole passageway darken with a kind of feral, ominous tension.
Not for us, Franklin gasped. For you, for a spirit who could never be born.
The hard laughter instantly stopped. With her fist still cocked and ready to strike a killing blow, the woman's expression suddenly became confused.
What did you say?
Her legs, clamped around Franklin's ribs, loosened. Ben Franklin drew in several long, painful breaths and laid his head back onto the deck, closing his eyes. He didn't know where Louis was, probably dead or caught in the act of setting the barrels on fire. The Baron? Also probably dead. And even if this she-creature let Ben live, what would the crew and the Hessians do? Franklin was positively powerless. But he still had his words. Always, Benjamin Franklin had his words.
"I know what you are,"
Franklin said, opening his eyes and gazing up into the woman's face. She was remarkably beautiful, with a full mouth, lovely, well-defined cheeks, a proud bearing, and blonde hair the color of soft gold.
"Don't speak to me of what I am,"
the woman hissed.
"Nevertheless," Franklin said, "I know, because I've known one just like you. He was sent, like you're being sent, to fight us, to fight in America. He was a cudgel, but you are a rapier. The one smashes, the other slashes, hunting men and otherly things, the demons that stalk the shadows, the ones we scholars of science sometimes dare not talk about, but we know are still waiting. He's out there right now, fighting the darkness. I think he's trying to atone. For what, I have never been quite sure. If you're like him, and I think you are, you might know better than I."
The woman stared down at Franklin, her eyes boring into his soul, searching for something, as if trying to read the pages of Benjamin Franklin's brain. The cocked fist slowly lowered. "I know the one of whom you speak," she said, her voice gone cold, almost monotone. "He was with us in the beginning, for the very first war. The war when it all began, before this world existed. I was there, when he entered Dipple's golem, seizing for himself what so many of us had always wanted. Franks told me God commanded him to serve us," Benjamin said.
"Franks? Is that what he calls himself?"
"How appropriate. Me? I took a very different path. Dipple was in despair after his first creation fled. The men who'd come for Franks? They took Dipple away in chains. They threw him to the floor before the court of the Landgrave. Dipple begged for his life. He promised the Landgrave anything. The Landgrave commanded Dipple to make me."
"As a bride?" Franklin said.
"The perfect object of the Landgrave's desire. I took this body when I had the chance, but it was a gamble I learned to regret. Human beings are hard for me to relate to. I hated any man who touched me. I made a poor wife. So then I was deemed a prisoner, tortured, starved, left to die. But my kind, we do not die from neglect alone. We endure. And the prisoner was eventually summoned for a new purpose, and taught manners and etiquette, and how to learn languages, and about the art of going into the courts of other houses and other lands, to seduce enemies to their beds, where I would finish them."
"I believe it," Franklin croaked.
"The English crown believes if it can just get rid of a few key people in your little revolution, the colonies will come back. Most of the colonists are loyal to the crown, you know."
"I know," Franklin said. "It doesn't make any difference. We will be free, one way or another. So too could you be, if you wish."
"To be like him?" she said viciously. "Your battering ram against the others who call the darkness home?"
"Or not," Franklin said. "He entered into the contract of his own free will, and we abide that contract. Although discovering your existence does complicate things."
"Why?"
"He will seek to destroy you," Franklin said direly. "There are to be no others like him, ever. He may even think you are a violation of our contract, and try to destroy us too."
The woman considered, her expression turning thoughtful.
"Yes. Yes. I think you just might be right about that."
"What keeps you in the service of the Hessians?" Franklin asked.
"It's all I know," she spat. "It's the only purpose I have, beyond existing."
"We could help you find a new purpose," Franklin said, managing a small smile. The sound of running feet in the passageways alerted both of them to the fact that whatever distraction had been provided outside, it was now ending. Von Steuben's pistol shot had drawn plenty of attention on its own.
"And we could find a way to keep Franks from finding out about you," Franklin offered, his smile broadening.
"But first we have to find a way out of this mess." The sound of running feet grew louder. There was a tiny moment of indecision on the woman's face, sculpted, perfect, like Michelangelo would have done, but in living flesh. Then she was dragging Franklin back into her cabin, slamming the door. A man's groan alerted Franklin to the fact that von Steuben was still alive.
"He's not hurt badly," the woman said. But he won't be shooting the locks off of any other cabin doors any time soon.
We are trapped, Franklin said, and one of our party is still missing.
We'll look for him later, she said.
You presume there will be a later, Benjamin remarked dryly.
I have survived far worse. Just don't leave this cabin. I will take care of everything else. You just have to promise me that you're good on your word, Monsieur Franklin.
How do you know who I am?
Now that we've been talking, I realize you are one of my intended targets.
I think I ought to be flattered, Franklin said, half in jest.
Promise, she spat.
I promise, before God the Creator, and on my honor as a gentleman, that the Continental Congress shall make a home for you, of your own choosing and desire. A woman with your abilities could do any number of things, and Franks won't know anything about it. To him, you will not exist.
Good. Then I agree. Jane Yellowrock is a very successful hunter who has worked with us at times. Surprisingly, her exploits have been chronicled in a series of best-selling novels and sold as urban fantasy in stores everywhere. I believe this to be some sort of MCB trick to confuse the general public. A.L.
She-Bitch, Killer of Kits, Faith Hunter. The child was 12, one of those gorgeous blondes with blue eyes and creamy skin, but so pale she nearly matched the white of the hospital sheets and the bandages that covered her arms. Eventually the wounds would close, the scars would heal, shrink, and fade. Maybe. Possibly. If she was allowed to live. The doctors said there was a 50% chance she'd go furry at the full moon. 50% chance. Crap. Furry meant that she'd be insane, biting anything that moved. A werewolf. For the rest of her unnatural short life. The two suits in the hallway outside the door were to make sure that she stayed in the hospital, under observation. Their job was to put a bullet in her brain if she changed on the full moon, though no one had told her, or her parents, that. It had to be the most difficult job on the planet, and I wouldn't change places with the shooters for love nor money. My job was a lot easier. To track down and kill the clawed and fanged wolf that bit her. If I took the job. Is that all you remember, Sandra? I asked. Her mother's grip tightened on her hand. Mrs. Daugherty was sick and tired of all the questions, all the law enforcement people traipsing in and out, and the media parked in front of the hospital constantly trying to get inside. That's what she said. That's what she's said to every single person who's asked. That's all she remembers. I gave her a commiserating shrug. I know it's annoying. But memory is a crazy thing. Sometimes things jog loose and we remember more later. I knew. I remembered my youth, some 170 years ago. Skinwalkers live long. Few prosper. I turned my eyes back to Sandra's. Like smells. Do you remember any smells? Food, smoke, cigarettes? Anything? Sandra squinted her eyes, her mouth pulling down, and I knew that the mention of scent had triggered something in her memory. My heart rate spiked. I smelled chemicals, and meat cooking, like when you cook steak on the grill, Daddy, she said to the silent man sitting in the chair by the window. All the time, or only sometimes? I asked. All the time when the sun was up. Most of the time at night, and there was a lot of noise. Trucks, and she called me baby girl and pumpkin and Becca, not my name. as if in the insane way of werewolves, she had been replacing a lost child. I must have given away my interest because Mr. Daugherty leaned in and asked, "Is that important?" He was a small man compared to my 6 feet in height, but he outweighed me by 80 pounds, all tight, protective muscle. Could be. I gave him a maybe, maybe not look, and pulled a business card from a pocket. With 2 fingers, I held it out to Sandra's father. "I promise to tell you when I get the thing that hurt your daughter." "That's more than anyone else has offered," he said, taking the card. "For that alone, I'll call if she remembers more." "My thanks." I turned to leave. "You're Jane Yellowrock, aren't you?" he said. "Cherokee woman, vampire hunter, have stakes, will travel. That's your motto." I nodded, shoved my hip-length black braid over my shoulder, and left the room. I didn't stop to make nice-nice with the 2 guards. My beast wanted to tear their eyes out at the very thought of them killing Sandra. But they'd be just as happy killing me if they got a whiff of what I was. Gunmen on government pay couldn't be trusted to ask first and shoot later, and few people knew the difference between a skinwalker and a were. It didn't make me safer that most skinwalkers were evil, baby-eating things called liver-eater or spear-finger. I was a Cherokee skinwalker, the pre-white man version, which meant I was sane and not a Hut Luna. So far. But lucky me. I left without speaking, my scuffed Lucchese boots too loud on the hospital floors, that hollow echo that spoke of ancient death. Current death, and impending death. I hated hospitals. The stink of illness and broken bodies was foul even to humans, and with my skinwalker senses, it was an overpowering, fetid stink. I pushed through the doors of Mission Health and out into the icy night. It was late fall, which in the mountains meant the first snow had already fallen and another was due. I'd gotten soft in the warm damp of New Orleans, but my beast remembered everything there was to know about stalking prey in bare trees on frozen earth. She would love a hunt this time of year, so long as I didn't get bit. I had discovered a way around going wolfy, but it wasn't an easy process, and my magic had begun to change, sometimes in dangerous ways. I'd rather not use its less predictable elements. The doors closed behind me, and I took a deep breath. The frigid air smelled of home, and for a moment that lasted a single heartbeat, I let myself grieve for the things I'd lost. Then I stepped into the street and headed for my bike, Bitsa. The Harley Panhead was freshly repaired, an old beauty with lots of new parts and perfect gleaming golden paint, puma claws reaching across the fuel tank. She was parked under a security light. I stopped. Standing beside Bitzo was a long-forgotten piece of my past. I started walking again, hating that I had hesitated, hating that he saw me hesitate, hating him. And I didn't hate many people. I reached the bike without slowing, and he stepped back. It was that or get shoved aside. His long legs were leaner than I remembered, blondish hair dulled by silver, jeans and t-shirt, shoulder holster with a 45, scruffy beard, jacket. He still smelled of coffee and Irish Spring soap. And something inside me somersaulted, fisted up and growled, though I kept it all inside. "You still ride a kickstart," he said. Observant. I didn't answer, just helmeted up, my eyes on his face, more craggy, the lines deeper. "Fine. You going after the wolf?" I straddled the Harley. Again, I didn't answer. Put a foot on the start and stood tall to kick Bitsa on. "MHI has the gig," he said, warning me off. I paused, letting my weight settle back to my feet, still straddling the panhead. I'd never said the words, never had the chance, though for years they had burned in my chest. Maybe now was the time to get some closure. Monster Hunter International is a decent organization. Ben and Layden are okay. They came back for me when you left me to die. If they show up, I'll utilize them. If they beat me to the punch, I'll help them. I let a hint of my beast glow into my eyes. Nomad had seen that only once, and it had scared him. Bad. Bite me, bitch, he spat. Inside me, beast sat up. Eat human. Eat former mate. My lips curled up, a toothy smile. Tried that, I said to both of them. Tasted like chicken. I came down on the start and bits of roared to life, that particular Harley rhythm that can't be imitated. I eased off and out of the parking lot. In my youth, I had liked the bad boys, the dangerous ones, the kind that broke a girl's heart. I had learned a lot since then, woman scorned and all that. I had been iffy on going after the wolf. Now, she was mine. I was out on the open road before the Grindolo crawled out of my bike jacket pocket and up onto my shoulder. Grindies kill wares, anywhere that harms a human, but they're rare on this continent and little known. This one was neon green, the size of a six-month-old kitten, with steel claws sharp as razors. She had appeared in my hotel room last night. Maybe she came through the AC vent. Maybe she walked through the walls. I didn't know. I had met Grindies before, and they were cute as the kittens they appeared to be. Until they needed to kill. Because of the coat color, I figured she was litter mate to the ones in New Orleans and Knoxville. This one loved to ride, nose to the wind. Somehow she didn't get blown off, Grindy magic. I'd named her Bean. I stopped at the QT gas station and pulled up a sat map of Asheville, one already highlighted by all the werewolf sightings, child disappearances, and odd animal attacks. Wolves are territorial, stick to known hunting ranges, and form packs. I figured this one was doing just that, biting to make a family she had lost. My partners in Yellow Rock Security had marked off a likely hunting range centered by the sites, and I followed the terrain, checking water sources and how the sun would rise and set against the ridges of the mountains. I texted the Youngers, back in New Orleans. Taking the gig. Site looks good. More in AM. I weaponed up with what little gear I had checked on the flight to Charlotte, and then stored in the saddlebags. No way was I riding anywhere now without weapons, not with Nomad around again. A girl can't be too careful. Before I started my hunt, I pulled a small flashlight and went over the bike with fingers, eyes, and nose until I found the small GPS tracker. Nomad had positioned it up under the seat, easy to find. Thinking it was a game, Bean joined the hunt. Together we found the second one attached to a saddlebag strap. The Grindy found the third one wedged into the headlight casing. Nomad was a sneaky little bastard. I wrote him a note with the word M-H-I on top, folded the scrap of paper around the trackers, and placed the package on pump number one. I hadn't seen members of Monster Hunter International since they pulled me out of the Tennessee River, half dead from my second real run-in with a rogue vampire. Nomads and my very first hunt had been easy. Stake, behead, and payment. An experience that left me cocky. The second rogue vamp had been a near-death disaster, the event that sent me out on my own and Nomad into the employ of Monster Hunter International. I was pretty sure that Ben and Layden, or the rest of MHI, didn't know that Nomad had tucked tail and run when the vamp and I fell off a bridge into the Tennessee River, leaving me alone, fighting the vamp underwater. I made it a point not to think about that event. Ever. After refueling, I took the Pisgah Highway through the dark to the tied uphill U-turn neck that bikers love. There, I caught the scent of She-Wolf, maybe 2 days old. I slowed and put my nose to the air, taking in everything. At the full moon, she had taken down a deer, eaten, and left the entrails and splintered bones behind. She wasn't alone. The scent patterns told me that she had a pack. One was a male cub, likely one of 4 missing Asheville kids. I eased off Route 151 and onto an old logging road that hadn't seen traffic in decades. No ATV tracks, no horse scent, just old snow, matted leaves, woods, deep gullies and ridges. 100 yards in, I parked Bitsa behind a jagged boulder, stripped and left my folded clothes and most of the human weapons in the saddlebags. I attached a go bag filled with clothes, a Yellow Rock security GPS tracker, and a 380 around my neck, and sat on the rock. Bean sat on a limb, watching as if fascinated, eyes huge and glowing in the night. I was in no hurry as I slipped into a meditative state and shifted into my beast. Hunt killer of kits, beast thought at me the moment we were mountain lion. Kill pack hunter before she can make more. That's the idea, I thought back at her. What I'd do with a teenager in wolf form once the bitch was dead, I didn't know. But no way was I killing kids. In Puma Concolor form, I wee padded into the night, found a rabbit warren with a dozen rabbits at the surface eating underbrush. Beast and Bean made a game of chasing them, and then ate them to restore calories lost in the shift. When we were full, we went wolf hunting. I found werewolf scent, scat, a downed tree where they cleaned their claws, markings, and several werewolf trails that had been used often enough to indicate a den was close. There was more than one wolf bitch. This was a pack. With 1 20-foot leap, I took to the tree limbs, Bean on my shoulders, to keep the wolves from finding a ground trail that could lead back to me. The scent told me the bitch was young, healthy, probably turned 12 to 14 moons past when I hunted a werewolf pack in the Appalachians. I had assumed some had gotten away, in human form, via vehicle transport. Now I knew for sure. Letting them get away made the new disappearances and deaths my fault. Guilt twisted her talons deep into me. Familiar. But they wouldn't get away this time, no matter how much experience they had gained in the intervening months. Nowhere could survive against a mountain cat who had hunted since the Trail of Tears. Beast growled softly, agreeing. Bean hissed, mouth close by my ear. High in the trees, I scouted the wolves' territory, found one of their watering holes on a branch of McKinney Creek. I also caught the scent of death. Weeks old, long decayed. At least one of the other missing children hadn't survived the transformation to werewolf. Beast growled, a vibration that carried through the night. Beast kill killer of kits. Beast kill pack hunters. Chuffing in fury with each step, we followed the stink through the treetops, over the McKinney, to the remains. They'd been strewn over a wide area by scavenger depredation. It had been too long to tell if the body was male or female by scent, but the sight of the doll beside the scattered ribs and ruffles on a small dress told me the gender. They'd eaten a little girl. Beast's growl shuddered through us, a low reverberation of sound, counterpoint to Bean's harmonious howl. The entire forest went dead silent. Kill, killer of human kit. Rip out throats. Drink blood. We memorized the location by lights in the distance, cell towers on the nearby crests of hills, and by beast's cat awareness. Unlike most humans, Beast always knew where she was. Then we leaped 30 feet to the ground, following the scent trail, no longer caring if we were discovered by the prey we tracked. More wolf scents appeared, overlapping, 3 or 4 males and a lone female. In my experience, females were rare. Pack hunters, close, Beast thought, as we caught a distant scent of wood smoke, garbage, and raw sewage. Yeah, maybe we'll get lucky. Can you take on them all? Beast is best hunter, kill killer of kits. Above us, the moon appeared through the trees, a waning bulbous shape. Beast thought, Mother Moon, with kits at teats. She had her own name for each phase of the moon. Knowing she could be spotted in the cold, clear night, she took to the limbs again and crept toward the stink of man. In a clearing at the base of a gully were 3 small mobile homes, circa 1960s. The trailers looked as if they had been dragged into the woods and set up as temporary living quarters. No running water, no septic tanks, no electricity, and no guard set. By the smell, it was currently deserted, the wolves out hunting. The pack was overconfident. That was a good thing. We turned back into the trees and took a different route back to Bitsa. I changed into human form, dressed, rebraided my hip-length hair and weaponed up. It was downright cold. And while riding leathers would be best against the wind, all I had with me were second-hand ones from a consignment bike shop in Charlotte. My good fighting leathers were back in New Orleans. Not expecting that I'd be chasing werewolves, I'd traveled light. Stupid me. Back in town, I cleaned out a fast food restaurant's ready-made breakfasts for the calories, bought supplies, and checked into a Country Inn and Suites. Bean curled on a pillow and was instantly asleep. I made a conference call to the youngers. After hellos, I said, Get me contracts and liability releases. I uploaded my search from the GPS tracker. I need every bit of intel you can dig up on the owners and or tenants of the land at the farthest point. And I don't need help. I got yahoos here I can call on if I need. What kind of yahoos? Alex asked. He was the intel-slash-hacker-slash-background part of YS, a 19-year-old kid who was scary smart when it came to intel. People I used to know, I assured. I'm good. Stay home. Finish the security job. I didn't need their help. Last thing I wanted was for my human partners to get bit. Name's Eli, the elder younger asked. Well, demanded. No. Their interest sharpened like blades on a whetstone. Janie? Eli asked carefully. I took a breath and let out the rage I had held down by force of will. They killed a child. My voice vibrated, anger stripping my throat raw. Ate her. I swallowed and managed a breath, got myself and my emotions under control. I've got a Grindelo. We'll be done before you could get here. Jane, call with info if you get it. I ended the call. I should never have mentioned yahoos. Now they'd be looking into my past, into things that were none of their business. There were days when my big mouth still got me in trouble. I'd have to live with my slip-up. Bean was sleeping on the pillow when I left the inn. I was curious if and how she'd catch up to me. Grindies weren't magical, but they often acted like it. I didn't have enough weapons to deal with a pack, no matter what Beast thought, and I wasted a moment wishing I had the Benelli M4 and my silver-plated vamp killers. But even without my gear, I had an ace in the hole. One of the several guys who hand-packed my silver flechette rounds lived on the French Broad between I-26 and the Blue Ridge Parkway. Old Bourbon had most anything for the right price. Old Bourbon wasn't his real name. He lived off the grid, squatting in an old school bus that he'd somehow mounted on a deck on 10-foot-high pylons at the end of a winding mud trail that routinely washed away when the French Broad flooded. Somehow his bus survived. Maybe he tossed an anchor. Leaving Bitsa on the trail, I hiked in. Bourbon met me with the business end of a shotgun, but we parted happy. Bourbon with a fistful of cash, and me with two fairly well-balanced silver-plated machetes and an ancient bolt-action Mossberg 12-gauge shotgun of indeterminate provenance, but with excellent action. I also had a well-used leather spine rig and a pocket full of his hand-packed silver flechette shells, which had been my main goal. I had wanted a pump shotgun, but because of hunting season, Bourbon was fresh out. The bolt was all he had left. It wasn't enough gear to take down a pack, but I had the reek of a child's decomposing body stuck in my memory, and a craving for vengeance burning through me. And I had the .380. I could always throw it at the werewolf like they did in the movies. The path to the impromptu trailer park hidden in the hills was even worse than the road to Old Bourbon's place, and it looked like it hadn't been driven on in ages. A mile in, trees were down across it, which is where I left Bitsa. The werewolves had marked their territory with piles of poo and the stink of werewolf urine. Classy. I figured they four-pawed it over land when they went in and out, and assuming they had any, left parked vehicles off another road somewhere. If I cared, I'd backtrack and find their parking area and access. I didn't. I had changed boots before I left the inn, and the heavily modified combat-style boots were silent as I approached the clearing along a well-used wolf trail. Wood smoke blew on the breeze, mixed with the stink of rotten meat, unwashed human, and sewage. But nothing moved. By the sun, it was around 10 a.m., but a front was blowing in promising snow, the winds currently from the west. I'd had a good image of the clearing from above before dawn, but I made a slow circumference, reconnoitering the three trailers, positioning each door, broken chairs, a bicycle in parts, a picnic table, the kind with benches built on. I learned where everything was and the fastest way around, over and through. The smell said several wolves were here, the female and some males, two of them cubs. The eldest male needed to be taken out first. He was likely one I had missed a year past, and he'd be more experienced. Keeping the body of Trailer One between me and the clearing, I stepped over a squat metal drum that stank of kerosene, slid the shotgun into the sheath at my back, and drew the machetes. There was a stinking puddle near the door where he had been using the ground for a toilet, but it was mostly dry. I hoped that was an indication that he was asleep. The door was long gone, making entry easy as I leaped up and landed lightly, but my weight depressed the rotten floor with a soft sigh. Colette? He sounded half asleep. Maybe he'd fall back asleep if I stayed silent. Sadly, the wind changed, and the wolf noises decreed that luck wasn't with me. A low rumble filled the trailer, reverberating off the mildewed walls. I heard the distinctive sound of bones breaking, reshaping. I dashed in, leaped over a broken recliner, bounded across a mattress on the floor and down the narrow hallway. He was the fastest shifter I had ever seen, already mostly wolf when my machete came down across him, cutting deep into his right shoulder, an inch off from the perfect strike point. The machete had more heft than a vamp killer, and less balance, and a less honed edge. The blade stopped before hitting the cervical spine, avulsing the dozens of neck and upper shoulder muscles. The trapezius and the sternocleidomastoids peeled back like the skin of a fruit. The werewolf screamed, a strangled dog cry. I whipped the machete out of the mess of muscle, blood pulsing as the blade tore through the carotid. I cut down with the other machete, using more muscle than I usually needed. but this time hitting the exact spot at the proper angle. The swing carried down, momentum burying the blade in the spinal processes. The wolf went silent. Too late. One full backswing downstroke and his head was on the floor. He was a bloody mess of flesh, bone, and fur, still wearing the flannel pajama bottoms he'd slept in as a human. I spun, blades out, throwing a circular spatter pattern across the walls. The missed initial cut had cost me, and I heard howls from across the compound. I wiped the machetes on the bare mattress and slid them into the unfamiliar sheaths at my thighs. Losing precious time, I pulled the shotgun, stalked through the mess and filth and leaped to the ground. I raised the gun drawn on beast's strength. I wasn't a shooter. I preferred blades for my work. But a mantra taught me by a sensei I had studied with had been, the right tool at the right time. A reddish blur flew through the air at me. Time did that slow dance effect, and I focused on his open maw, black lips snarling, 2-inch fangs, razor sharp on the inside edge. I raised the shotgun, fired point blank into his open mouth. I could almost see the silver flechette shot as it flew. I worked the bolt, the cartridge spinning to the side, thrust another shell into place for firing. Worked the bolt, reloading and firing twice more until his torso was bloody meat and silver. To the side, Bean was in a gory, furious fight with another reddish wolf, yowling and growling that I could hear over my concussion deafness. Bean's abnormally long canines latched under his jaw, claws slashing his throat. The wear couldn't get to her, even with the odd joints that gave him further reach than real wolves. Bean shredded his throat to the spine before he rolled over, dead. I got a glimpse of two black-furred wolf forms taken off into the woods. I swore softly, breathing heavy. There was nothing left to kill. I had let two get away. Worse, Bean was injured. Her blood was an emerald green, darker than her fur. She mewled piteously, and I lifted her gently into my gear bag, relieved to see flesh knitting about 1,000 times faster than a human's. "You do not have permission to die on me," I said. She glared at me, cat-like, before closing her eyes. In my world, the only true dead paranormal is one without a head. So I took all the heads. I took photos of the heads and dead wolves for proof of payment, sent them to YS for processing, and pulled the bodies into the smoking fire pit. I doused them with kerosene from the drum in back, and they burst into spectacular green and yellow flames. I took more photos as they burned. Over the reek of burning ware, I smelled something else, and heard a faint whimper as my hearing returned. I entered trailer 2, which was trashed but empty. It had been used as a den and mating nest by the bitch. In trailer 3, I found 2 teenagers, juvenile werewolves, chained to the floor, raving, psychotic, forever insane. My heart plummeted. I don't kill kids, no matter what. But I knew the wolves had to be put down. I opened my official cell phone, the one my boss could track me on, and spun the contact list to the ends. There it was in all its never-deleted glory. I debated for a whole 30 seconds, then dialed the number.
Nomad!
There was a pack. I got 3. My breath stopped. I forced myself to go on. Leaving 2 teens chained in a trailer at this GPS. They're all yours. I disconnected, texted him my GPS, resettled my gear, downed a bottle of water, and headed into the woods. I didn't answer his call back. I followed their trail to the watering hole on a branch of McKinney Creek, and then downstream to the creek itself. The McKinney roared, clear and greened by the season, full of snow melt and downed trees. It splashed almost playfully, but temps and underwater strainers could be deadly. The wolves had swum across and muddied the far bank. From upstream, water thundered, likely through a micro canyon. I hoisted the unfamiliar gear higher and trekked up. The crossing at the micro canyon wasn't much better, except for a leaning pine hanging on by a tangle of roots. I drew on my skinwalker energies and finished the job that some recent storm had started, pushed my bridge over where it bounced on the far shore. I'm stronger than I look. High on the ridge, I followed the wolf scent and tracks in the snow, a hard up and downhill hike. I heard it before I smelled it. Bikes. Lots of bikes, roaring along 151. The bitch had circled back to the highway adored by bikers. Sandra Daugherty had said she heard trucks. But maybe motorcycles? And the meat smell meant a biker grill. Colette had two dens. Half a mile down the road, I found tracks of wolves, barefoot humans, boot tracks, and bike tracks. I checked the sat maps and texted both my YS partners, and more reluctantly, Nomad. Pig it your way 3 miles from my 20, bitches on a bike. Then I made the trek back to Bitsa. Temps dropped and it started to snow. Nothing was ever easy. I wheeled from snow-covered mud trail to snow-covered asphalt. It was past sunset and I was starving. No surprise there. Some of the best chow in the world, or at least the most acid-inducing, could be found at biker bars. So I pulled in at Pig It Your Way and killed the engine about 50 feet from the door. I smelled gas, oil, and that heated, distinctive scent of Big Harley. There were 18 bikes in the lot and a dozen trucks. Country music blasted through the walls. The picture window was full of neon beer signs. Grease, beef, and spicy wings laced the air. The best perfume God ever created. Somewhere under the maid lounge was the stink of werewolves. They had been here days ago, maybe weeks ago, but they weren't here now. This wasn't the den. Disappointment threaded through me. I unhelmeted and made my way inside, where I stepped quickly to the side of the door. Burger menu, beer on tap, neon beer signs, all kinds of bikers and biker chicks, from the discreetly armed upper management Hell's Angels at the back booth, to the weekend riders at the opposing corner. There was no bouncer, but the interest of the bartender was predatory, and I had a feeling he kept lots of pretties back there. He was tall, had prison tats mixed with some really good ink, black hair, long and greasy, acne, knobby knuckles. I gave him a steady stare and a nod that told him I'd be starting no problems, acknowledging his dominant position. He relaxed and nodded back before I took a two-person booth that would place my back to the bar and me facing the door. I gave my order to the barmaid, made a trip to the ladies, positioned the shotgun on the bench beside me, and waited for my meal, as bikers roared up and the joint filled with Friday night partygoers. The food was every bit as delicious as I expected, and I was wiping my greasy hands when the door opened, and the stink of wear and something chemical-based, like battery acid mixed with drain cleaner and antifreeze swirled inside. I pulled the shotgun across my legs, but with the place full, there was no clear shot. Collateral damage. Polite phrase for dead and mangled humans. Bitten humans who might have to be put down. Crap. The bitch walked in, movements limber, wearing high-end biker boots, black leathers, and scarlet lipstick. She was tiny, sharp-featured and crazy-eyed, with wind-tousled dark hair. I could take her in my sleep. Except that she was followed by 3 huge werewolf males armed to the teeth. Too much potential collateral damage. I needed to get this outside. Fast. Behind them stepped Ben, laden, and Nomad, dressed in high-tech MHI armor, visible through open coats. Relief flashed through me. Layden spotted me and his eyebrows went up a millimeter or so. Layden was a minimalist, like other former military I know, buzz cut and the bluest eyes on the face of the earth. I winked at him and glanced out the picture window to the parking lot. He nodded. The wolves in human form caught my scent and all four stopped, sniffing the air. I don't smell human. The pack turned slowly toward me. Too late to get this fight outside, so I had to end it fast. I grinned at her, showing teeth, and laughed, giving MHI time to get into position. The MHI hunters moved into a semicircle around the males, but out of my line of fire. I stood up, slammed a machete onto the table with a loud thwack, braced the shotgun, and aimed it at the bitch. Seemed like I had lied to the bartender. The place fell dead silent, and I said, my words ringing, "Hey, bitch, I killed a few of your old men today. Now it's your turn." She screamed and launched herself at me, timed to that odd slowdown thing it did in battle. With all the time in the world, I bent my knees to take the hit, adjusted the weapon up, left-handed to cover the males just in case, lifted the machete to counter her lunge. Clawed hands reached out, grabbing the barrel, her teeth elongated, fur on her face and hands. I let her grip the weapon and start the torque that intended to take the shotgun from my hand. Bringing up the machete in my right, slightly curved point slanting toward her twisted torso, dropped my left shoulder and swept outward with the barrel, opening up her reach, exposing her belly, stealing her balance. The machete entered just below her breastbone, slightly to the right, cut deep. Rotation and angle pulled the blade through her body, hard left. Blood spattered over my arm, across the bar. Distantly, I heard screams, the pop-pop-pop of small arms, the boom of something bigger. Her torso twisted, hit my left arm, pushing the shotgun. I let it, put muscle behind the cut, severed the descending aorta in a release of pressure. Blood in a gush. The blade snagged on tendons in left hip and thigh before they gave way. Her rotation yanked the machete from my bloodied grip. She landed hard and rolled, guts spilling. I thought about shooting, but drew the remaining machete, glanced at the others. Ben was taking off a wolf's head. Layden was shoving another's head through the jukebox, glass shattering. Nomad was down, wolf fangs latched tight on his right arm. Buried in Dyneema or Xylon, I could smell the stuff. A fourth had joined the fray and ripped at Nomad's booted foot. A green blur flew through the air, landed on the wolf on Nomad's arm, steel claws slicing deep. Bean attack. I laughed, an unexpected sound in the chaos. Raised the machete. The bitch's belly was already trying to knit. Her face and body were mostly werewolf, fangs, claws, and oversized jaws. Drawn on beast's strength and speed, I brought the blade down, hitting her just below the mandible, severing carotid and jugular. Blood erupted under pressure. I cut again and again. Her head rolled over to the floor, tongue hanging out. I smelled smoke. The flames of a grease fire roiled from the kitchen. Dead wolves. Layden and Ben were cutting the jukebox wolf into pieces. Bean was gone. Nomad was bleeding badly. Out cold. Dang it. The rest of the bar had emptied. I gathered my weapons, took a quick burst of picks across the bar scene, bent and lifted Nomad into a fireman's carry. I left the bar, Layden and Ben behind me. "You got picks of the wolves?" Layden asked, His voice as casual as if we were discussing roses at a garden party. I got him, I said. Not quite as easy. You got bandages? You're the girl got sanitary napkins? Ben asked. I sighed. I had forgotten the crudity of some MHI. No. But I saw some in the ladies back in a sec. I dumped the weapons and Nomad onto him and raced into the smoke, which had filled the bar. I beat open the vending machine and the ladies and stuck a variety of absorbent materials down my shirt. Smoke curled in under the door. I heard a frightened cry, spotted a small handle with a lock, hinges, trap door. Adrenaline pumping, I wrenched open the door, the small lock flying. Two children were in the cramped space, tears and mucus on their faces. I didn't ask. I just reached in and took an arm in each hand, hauled them up against me, coughed my way outside. MHI were behind a rusted U-Haul that hadn't been there earlier, taking cover, applying pressure to Nomad's wounds. They stared at the children and me, open-mouthed. I remembered the chemical smell on the werewolves and Sandra Daugherty's testimony. The U-Haul smells like a mobile meth lab, I said. The men looked from me to the U-Haul. There was something odd in their expressions, and Ben said, "That stuff flammable?" "Pretty much," I said. From out front, engines roared. Harleys, at least 10 bikes, heading in. I figured the bikers, who had vamoosed, were on the way back with reinforcements. Not good. But then nothing had ever been easy around Nomad. He was my own personal Murphy's Law. Behind me, I heard the distinctive schlacking sound of a shotgun. "Move and die." I glanced around. It was the greasy-haired, acneed barkeep, who kinda looked like a meth dealer. "We need out of here," Ben warned. "Flaming fun on the way," Layden added, too casual. I figured that meant they had called in an airstrike on the bar. "You ain't going nowhere," Greasy said. I was still holding the kids. Greasy was too close to miss and too far away to jump before he fired. Yeah, Murphy's Law. "Easy there," I said. "You killed Colette." "You were banging the werewolf chick?" Ben said. "Damn stupid." Greasy turned the weapon on him. I leaped away. Layden shot a three-tap. Greasy fell. "Now," Layden shouted. Ben picked up Nomad, Layden the weapons, and we raced away. Overhead, something roared. The ground shook. The air thundered. The U-Haul exploded outward. Heat like a furnace blasted me. I glanced back. The bar and the U-Haul were gone. The bikers wheeled and roared away. The helo landed. Medics took over Nomad and the kids. It's over. I closed my eyes and remembered to breathe. In the aftermath, Ben slipped a business card into my palm with the words, "For a good time, call." I chuckled and checked to see that he had given me his number. I said, "I'll send you the pics. The bitch is mine." "Pleasure doing business with you, Yellow Rock. Have stakes, will travel." My motto. MHI had been keeping tabs on me since they fished me, naked and bleeding, out of the Tennessee River. Interesting. Before law enforcement showed up and started asking questions, I puttered away from the melee, happy that I had parked far away from the piggy your way. Bitsa and I tootled through Asheville. I called the Daugherty's with my promised update, then checked my balance at an ATM. My account had been credited with 3 kills so far. A good start. Satisfied, I took the road south. Sometimes, I loved my job.
The U.S. government has a long history of drafting people and things into its war against unearthly forces. From what I've heard,
It is a tough gig. A.L.
Mr. Natural. Jody Lynn Nye. Bobby Hubert swung the machete with a practiced hand for the 30th or 40th time. She'd lost count. A swath of huge, lush green vines fell at her feet, and she stepped over it. While the other soldiers